We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, Notre Dame fans, Irish Breakdown family. We are back to talk, finally talk, Notre Dame and USC. That's Ryan Roberts. I'm Brian Driscoll. Ryan, it's the big one, man. The game is here. Notre Dame versus USC. I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up.
I think that there were three pillars this year, Brian. It was one, Ohio State, two, Clemson, and more in the middle of the season, and then USC, right? Those were the three games. And Notre Dame fans wanted to see. We want to see how they stack up against the perceived big boys. And USC has even outperformed a little bit of what I think we thought they would be at this point in the year with only one loss. So this is another massive test going out to Southern California. It's going to be a big-time opportunity for Notre Dame, who's been trending in the right direction over the last few games, obviously, to end the regular season on a high note and get the best bowl opportunity they possibly can.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think for me, Ryan, it really comes down to this is such an interesting game of polar opposites. In so many ways. And I mean, both teams are talented. Both teams are athletic. But the type of teams they are, Notre Dame, pound it out, play great defense, play great special teams. USC, fast, up-tempo, you know, get the ball out, you know, get your athletes in space. And it's offense, offense, offense. And there's East Coast or Midwest against West Coast, right? You know, blue collar against Hollywood. There are just so many intriguing matchups to this. And honestly, you could say that almost every year. And that's what makes this such a fun matchup is because like Ohio State and Michigan, it's like it's border rivals. It's they're very similar programs for a long time. And, you know, This is what makes this, you know, such a special rivalry to me, is the fact that it is so different. You don't have another rivalry in sports like this, where it's just two teams from completely different time zones, completely different parts of the country, completely different styles, and yet they have one thing in common, and that's a history and tradition of excellence.
Yep.
And that's what I think makes this such a special rivalry. And I'll be honest, as before we kind of get into the specifics, I prefer that the games be like this. Mm-hmm. One team's really good, the other team's really good. And, you know, you go out and you went, like the last few years, Notre Dame's beat USC and it's like, you know, they kind of slept walk through a couple of those games. USC wasn't that good. It was a lot like the 2000s, you know, when Pete Carroll came in and it was like, you know, you never really got, other than the 1 year with Brady Quinn in 06, and that didn't turn out very well. You never really felt like this is the year we take down USC. It never felt like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it was a little bit, it was more competitive from like 2010 for a few years, like Notre Dame won in 10, USC won 11, Notre Dame won in 12, really close game in 13, 14, USC smacks them, 15, Notre Dame gets payback, 16, USC beats them, 17, Notre Dame pounds them. And ever since then, it just hasn't been a real competitive series. And so I think this is good for this series. It's good for the rivalry and it's good for college football because it is such a unique rivalry. And because we haven't had many instances where both teams were good, for a long time, USC really was really good, Notre Dame wasn't. And then for a number of years in the last decade, Notre Dame's been really good and USC hasn't been. I think this is good for the game when both of these teams are good and this rivalry means something again. Not just means something like between the two fan bases, but means something big picture. Like USC has a chance to play for a national championship this year. What's standing between them right now? Notre Dame. And how many times has this story been told where it was either USC's playing for a title and Notre Dame stands between them or vice versa? Notre Dame's got a shot to go play for a title and USC stands between them. The last two times that Notre Dame went to the college or the two of the last three times that Notre Dame had a chance to go play for a championship, 2012 and 2018, they could not get there unless they had to go to Los Angeles and win. And they did both times. Now, 2020 was the exception because they didn't play. But in 2012 and 2018, that's been the case. Now the tide has turned a little bit. Now it's USC with a chance to get there out in LA, and they've got to get through Notre Dame. And I just think this puts so much more on this matchup that makes it such a more entertaining matchup to prepare for. And hopefully it's an entertaining game when we get there on Saturday.
Well, I think you hit on two very key points for me. One is I dislike USC. Be very honest. Yeah, I'll be very honest about it, right? Michigan and USC are the two teams that I just do not like much. But USC is one of those teams, and we've talked about this a ton in the past, when USC is a good program and they are successful, college football is better. It just is. That's one of the historic programs. And I want USC to be good. I want Notre Dame to be better, but I still want them to be a very good football team, obviously, right? So the fact that they've gotten back to where they are now after going 4-8 last year, it's a great first step for Lincoln Riley. It's a really nice first year, initial season to get, hopefully get the program back to what it should be, what it has been in, you know, the Pete Carroll era at the end of there. And, you know, obviously working further back than that, USC has been a prominent program throughout the history other than the last few years of Clay Helton, right? So seeing them take that step has been very important. And Brian, I mean, We do our pick'ems every week, and I sent you mine in this morning, and I think I literally used that same exact turn. I'm like, these is the polar opposite of teams, man. And you just said it yourself. How Notre Dame wants to win is so much different than what USC wants to win. They are about as far apart as you can get from a fan base perspective, from a location perspective, from a time zone perspective, from a general play style perspective. They are polar opposites, which adds into the fascination because people are going to turn on Notre Dame, USC, two big brands, rivalry, all that good stuff. You add in the fact that they are completely different football teams that want to win in a completely different fashion. I think that really adds into the lore, the fanfare. And obviously, you know that every fan, Notre Dame, national alike, will be tuned in on Saturday night to see what should be a great game, hopefully.
Right. It is funny how different generations view USC. Like the generation in front of me has a very deep dislike of USC. The generation that came after me, your generation, has a deep dislike of USC. And I think a lot of it is what was the rivalry like when you were young? For you, as someone who was born in, was like 91, mm-hmm. right? 91. So you Notre Dame didn't really dominate that series, you know, for your really young life, like really young, it was back and forth. But once you kind of got old enough to really follow Notre Dame, it was dominated by USC. For me, I started watching in 1988. I watched almost a decade go by before USC won a game in this rivalry, you know, and it's just like, so it was Michigan and Penn State that were able to knock off Notre Dame at times. It was Miami that was the rivalry that I hated growing up. Well, by the time you were following Notre Dame, or by the time you were born, the Notre Dame-Miami rivalry was over. You know, I mean, it ended in 1990.
Yep.
So it is always funny and fascinating. Like, I don't have the hate for USC. Now, I'm not saying I may not develop it, and I've started to over the last year. Yeah. Because I despise what USC has done. And the transfer thing bothers me, but it's more so the Big Ten jump. Like, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. really sickened me, to be honest with you, because it's like, you know, you have no loyalty to anything, no sense of honor, no sense of tradition. It's about money. And I have no sympathy for that at all. So I'm starting to hate USC, but it's mm-hmm. not because of the football rivalry. So I always find that fascinating.
It's funny. I mean, well, the good thing is now that they're in the Big Ten, I can hate them and Michigan in the same conference now, which would be great to figure out. But I mean, you're right, Brian. I mean, my oldest memories of USC, as far as when I was a kid, was the middle to end of the Carson Palmer years, right? That led right into the Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush era, which was obviously they were fantastic. And I mean, the last game they ever played against Vince Young in the Rose Bowl, that was one of the greatest games I've ever seen, just in general, right? So my younger childhood was filled with USC being a very successful team, to your point, right? And it's been filled also with Notre Dame not being a very successful team. I mean, for the longest time, I clinged on to the Brady Quinn years, the last two, right? Because it's like, wow. Notre Dame won 9 games. It's so incredible. it's so funny now to look back, and now you're just like, times have definitely changed from the tail end of the Bob Davey to Tyra Willingham to the end of the Charlie Weiss era. But it's been fascinating to see, to your point. Regardless, though, these are two of the best programs in college football, two historic programs, two programs that still have a lot to fight for, right? You mentioned USC has more to play for with their playoff hopes, but Notre Dame still has bowl dreams, right? And ending the season outright and get now transitioning to 2023 with a lot of high expectations, right? So there is a lot to play for, and you'd be lying to yourself if Notre Dame fans and Notre Dame team alike wouldn't like to ruin some of the USC playoff dreams this year. They would love to be the ruiner of that conversation.
No doubt. So, Ryan, I think there's nothing more contrasting about this rivalry. I mean, there's nothing that shows how contrasting this rivalry is or this matchup is than to dive in the numbers. And I think that's what we're going to – do next. We're going to dive into the sort of the on-paper matchup and just the different aspects of this game. But just a reminder to people, we're going to have two shows today. We're going to have this show, obviously, at 2. And then our next show is not going to be till 8 p.m. tonight because we've got some family obligations that we have to take care of. So we'll be going live tonight at 8 o'clock for our Keys to Victory article. And remember, we are off tomorrow because it is Thanksgiving, and we want all of you to have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. We will have some recorded shows up. We'll cut these videos up and things like that. And, you know, and I may do something a little special tonight to kind of put out tomorrow morning. We'll see about that. But, that's kind of just to let people know that's what our plan is for the rest of the day. So, Ryan, let's dive into this matchup of the Notre Dame sort of offense versus the USC defense, and then the USC defense against the Notre Dame offense, because it is really fascinating how these aspects match up. There's some areas in this matchup, Ryan, where it's good on good, some aspects where it's good on not very good. And how those things play out is going to have a huge role in this game. And that's why we do this breakdown, is to not just show, because it's not always, well, they're really good at that and that team's not good at that, so it's obviously going to work out that way. It doesn't. But that's the key, is you to win a game like this, Ryan, you've got to be good at what you do, and you've got to try to stop the other team from being good at what they do, as good as what they do. And that's going to be the key for Notre Dame. And then now this is going to let us find out, well, what are those things? And I think we're going to begin, as we always do, I don't know why I keep saying think. We're going to start with, as we always do, which is the Notre Dame rushing offense against the USC rushing defense. And Ryan, as we talked before, you know, there's going to be some good on good matchups. This is not one of those. This is not a good on good matchup. This is a good on not very good matchup. And, you know, you look at this and the numbers aren't super different from a yards to, you know, a yard standpoint. There's obviously big jumps in yards per attempt and touchdowns. USC's rushing defense gives up a lot of yards per attempt and a lot of touchdowns on the ground. Yards, it's not a huge difference. But when you look at Notre Dame, I think that the Notre Dame ranking is a little bit misleading as to what this Notre Dame team is now. And I think we can say with one minor hiccup, that would be against Navy, which was still a very bizarre game. Notre Dame's ground attack really the last 2 months has been outstanding. Yep. You know, because you're talking about a team, Ryan, that in the first game of the year rushed for 76 yards. The next game of the year rushed for, 130 yards. The next game they rushed for 147 yards. And as we talk then, like, wow, this team is really struggling to be what we thought it was going to be. They broke out on September 24th against North Carolina with 287 rushing yards in that game. That began a stretch of 8 games in which Notre Dame rushed for at least 223 yards in 6 of the next 8 games. And Notre Dame is currently averaging 218.1 yards per game over the last 8 games. So, again, it's not like, hey, they're in the middle of a 3-game hot streak. This is now an 8-game stretch in which Notre Dame has been this team. And I think I think that's more indicative of who they are. And if you look at that ranking right there, 218 yards a game, it would put them 13th in the country in rushing offense. Right. I think that's more indicative of who this offense is. And of course, there's 3 option teams ahead of them. Mm-hmm. I think that's more indicative than even those numbers, in my opinion, what those numbers show. So I think that's something to keep when you talk about context. I think that's a very important part of the context of who this team is when you look at just from a Notre Dame offensive standpoint.
Well, and I will say this because I agree with you 100%, right? Notre Dame's rushing offense has been the backbone of this team during the stretch that they've now been able to put together and the success that they've had over the last few games. This is – you're coming now to the – crossroads where this is why Notre Dame is successful. This is the identity of this football team. Everyone knows it. Notre Dame knows it. And you have to live that, right? Like, you have to be proud of how you win, in especially offensively right now. That's how you win. And Brian, when you're facing off against a USC team, I know we've talked about this before, but I can't stand Alex Grinch's defense. I really can't, man. Structurally, from a run game perspective, it's not pretty, man. And it's never really been pretty. He had one great year at Washington State, one phenomenal year where Hercules Mataiafa was an All-American and everything was cooking that year. Oklahoma was very inconsistent. USC has also been very inconsistent. This is not a great rushing defense. They have a couple names in their front 7 that people are going to know and that people should know that are good football players. But for the most part, I think that the defense – like, it needs to get more talented, for sure. It needs to, especially in the front 7.
Right.
But it's also, I think, this is a product of what we've seen from Alex Grinch, right? He's a master of chaos. But being a master of chaos also means that you leave other spots out to dry a lot. And it's structurally unsound. And that's the issues that I have most seen with the USC rush defense, is that there's just guys that just aren't in the right spot a lot, which is maddening for them.
They give up gash plays. I mean, there's plays where you're just like, man, boy, that was a great series. They just came out, they were filling gaps, they shut that team down, and then the next series it's like 15, 9, 25, 13, 40-yard touchdown. Like, how did that team do that when the last series they looked as good as they were? And look, we have I don't know if Archer's in the show with us today, but Archer, Ohio State fans will tell you the same thing. I mean, they could not stand him in a very short period of time at Ohio State because it was a lot of the same thing. It's a very aggressive defense. It's a really, like, let's try to create negatives type of defense. And that's why when you look at it, you know, kind of looking ahead, we'll see some things about this defense. There's a couple areas about this defense that are very good statistically. If you just take those statistics in a vacuum, And you know, they're very good in sacks. They're very good in tackles for loss. They're very good at turnovers. But the way they go about it puts them such at risk of getting gashed in so many other areas. And it's really the thing about it, the reason people say, you know, why does Lincoln Riley put up with that? Because that's what Lincoln Riley wants. He doesn't care about having a defense that stops the rushing attack. He wants a defense that's going to force stops however you can get them. I just need you to give me 2 to 3 stops a game and we won't lose.
And opportunistic turnovers, right, is a big thing for, right, Lincoln as well.
Yeah. Right. And that's kind of what they do. So yep. I don't think he necessarily has a problem with this, honestly, because it was the same thing at Oklahoma.
Yep.
And so it's going to make this matchup interesting. Cause also, if you look at the last 8 games for Notre Dame as well, they're averaging 5.0 yards per rush. Which also obviously, you know, puts them a little bit higher than where they are now. That would put them tied for 26 with BYU in yards per attempt. And so we're seeing them start, however, the last 2 of the last 3 games to be a little bit more big play in their run game.
Yep.
And this is going to be a thing in this game, Ryan, where you're going to need to see that. You're going to need to see 2 things from the Notre Dame ground attack: efficiency and rip off some big plays. That's going to be a very key. And first down run game success is going to be huge in this game. Because you're going to need to be able to sometimes match USC with scores, and the ground attack is going to be key to that. And when you look at USC, Ryan, also the other aspect of it is they don't really have a lot of bad games on defense. Like, they don't have that, you know, that performance like Notre Dame's had a couple games like that where it's like, you know, 255 against Navy and you're like, wow, that's a lot of yards. Or, you know, like last year, for example, when they gave up 264 in the opener against Florida State. Their most yards they've only given up over 200 yards this year twice. That was in week 2 to Stanford, and then last week to UCLA, and the Stanford game was 221 yards.
Yeah.
So they're consistently giving up yards to teams, you know, 146, 221, 164, 153, 88, 144, 138, 163, 63, 135, 204. So it is interesting to see how they do it. And then also, as we'll get into the pass defense, like, they're not real good in that area either. And I think part of it too is when you look at their numbers, that people have to understand is the reason their rushing numbers don't match the other parts is because a lot of teams in the Pac-12 don't run the football.
Right.
And if you look at the numbers, Ryan, it's very strange. We were having this conversation on the message board yesterday, you know, about USC's rush defense. UCLA is averaging 236.8 yards a game. Mm-hmm. Oregon's averaging 223 yards a game. Utah's averaging 205. Oregon State's averaging 192. And then USC's next. Then there's this huge drop-off to USC's 5th. Then there's this huge drop-off to number 6. Washington's at 138.9. Then 132.9, 131.6, 115.4, 112.6, 112.3, and then 99.3.
Who's 99.3?
Cal. And then Stanford's right above them. And if you look at USC's schedule, they've played every team from 7 to 12. They didn't play Washington at number 6. They didn't play Oregon at number 2. So, I mean, a couple of those good rushing teams, they didn't play. Now, they did have some success. If you look at their game against Utah, they had some success running the football that game. But I felt, and you tell me if you disagree, they so overcommitted to trying to stop the run that allowed them to get kind of ripped up with some big plays in the pass game. And that ultimately is what cost them the game. So they haven't shown the ability to stop the run without then sacrificing other parts of their defense. And I think that's what makes them vulnerable is if you can establish your ground attack against USC, you're going to have a chance to score some points. There's no doubt about it.
Also, you want to talk about polar opposites, Brian? This team to stop the run is Notre Dame is a very downhill physical run style, right? USC wants to stop the run with movement, like you're talking about, right? Like, they'll take Eric Gentry, who is like 6'6", 200 pounds at linebacker, line him up all over the place. They'll take Tuilagapoto. I don't know how to pronounce his name. My deepest apologies to Tui, who's a very good player, by the way.
Tuilagapoto, 49. Just call him Tuilagapoto. Just do what I do with DJ. Just call him DJ.
All right, Tuli, who is a 6'4", 290-pound guy that plays mostly defensive end in their system because they play like kind of a hybrid 3-man, 4-man front. So they'll kind of rotate a little bit. But the master of chaos, right? They did this against UCLA, at least. I saw a bunch. they took Tully and they put him at middle linebacker, and they would just blitz him through random gaps and stuff, right? So they're just trying to make offensive line guess wrong. They're trying to use their movement to stop the run, while Notre Dame is going to just say, hey, we are going to run right down your throats, right? And we are going to come right at you. Stop it. And so it is also not only a good versus not so good comparison, it's also very different styles of team, right? Like, you're talking about a very finesse run defense in USC and a very power-centric, power-heavy running style with Notre Dame, a ton of duo, a ton of inside zone. Like, they're going to do those types of things. So just an interesting comparison based upon how these teams also want to win in these areas as well.
And to a degree, I think USC has to do that. Because if you look at their depth chart, Ryan, they're not very big. I mean, I would argue their ends, well, I mean, not even argue, it's just statistically, it's a fact. Their ends are bigger than their tackles. You know, Nick Figueroa is 200 starting ends. Nick Figueroa is 275 pounds. Tully is 290 pounds. And then their inside guys, Stanley Tuiafo, or Tuafo, I really mean no disrespect. I just don't know how to pronounce that. Is 270 pounds. And then Tyrone Tulaney is 280 pounds. The only guy that they have inside with any kind of size that plays a lot is Brandon Peely, who's 345 pounds, but he doesn't really move that great. Dejon Benton is 270 pounds. So, I mean, they're a bit of an undersized team. You know, and Shane Lee is big at 245, but, you know, Eric Gentry's 200 pounds. I mean, Raylan Goforth is only 225. They're not a real big team. And so I think they have to do that. Like, they don't have the luxury against Notre Dame to play the way that BC did to a degree, but more so how Clemson played. They're going to have to be like Navy. And that's the danger that I think for Notre Dame is, if you play your game, you should be okay. But if you have one of those off games like they had against Navy, or if your pass game's not able to really help you out, then that's where you could have some issues for Notre Dame, in that you can't really get your offense going. So that's the one danger for Notre Dame, is when you are so one-dimensional on offense, if that part of your offense isn't rolling, you can have some problems against a team like USC. But when you look at the statistics, Ryan, obviously in this particular matchup, this is clearly advantage Notre Dame. Even with the overall season numbers, it's clearly advantage Notre Dame. When you take into account what Notre Dame has become, it's a significant advantage for Notre Dame.
Without doubt.
Let's move on to the pass game matchup, Ryan. This is a very intriguing matchup, because in my opinion, the only bad-on-bad matchup of the game. Right, USC's not very good at stopping the pass, and Notre Dame's not very good at throwing it. Now, Notre Dame has at times been like, okay, hey, I think they're turning the corner here as a passing offense. We have seen, especially in some of the bigger games for Notre Dame, that they have shown an ability to make some plays through the air. Now, the problem is you just don't know what you're going to get. Obviously, North Carolina was an example where Drew Pine played great. BYU is an example where Drew Pine played great. I thought against Clemson, I thought he made some clutch plays in that game, but you're not going to beat USC, in my opinion. I just don't think it's possible to beat USC going 9 of 17 for 85 yards in the air. I just don't think that's doable. You know, I think at minimum you're going to need something like last week, where he hits a couple of throws that he missed, I think is what you're going to need. They're going to need to get something out of their pass game, Ryan, for this to be a game that I think Notre Dame can win, barring their defense forcing a lot of turnovers. But as we're going to get to here in a little bit, that's not exactly something that's very easy to do against this USC offense. So this is the matchup that'll concern you if you're Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because like you said, there's been glimpses, but it's obviously been super inconsistent from a Notre Dame passing offense perspective. You're facing it off against a defense that I would quantify them like this, Brian. I know we talked about it a little bit before the show, but the secondary is talented. I just think that they're just inconsistent right now, right? And we talked a little bit, it's, you know, some age things, right? Like, their best player in the secondary, in my opinion, is a true sophomore. I know you mentioned Sierra White, who I also believe is only a sophomore right now. So they're throwing out a lot of younger guys outside of, like, Max Williams. And so I just think there's a little bit of, not a little bit, there's been a lot of inconsistency with that unit. They've made a lot of big plays, which is quantified by the 18 interceptions that they have caused this year. But then they also have given up a ton of big plays, quantified by the 106th ranking nationally in pass yards let up per game, right? So it's a very feast or famine pass defense, I would say, for USC. Yeah. But for Notre Dame to have an opportunity to win this football game and potentially, you know, kind of hopefully dominate, Notre Dame's passing offense needs to come to play in this game. Because I agree with you. I don't think 9 out of 17 for 80-something yards is going to cut it. I don't. I think that Notre Dame needs to have at least an efficient ability to throw the football in this game. They don't have to throw for 400, but they have to have the threats in general, because you've seen that right now this is not a great pass defense for USC, and this can't be a game where they become a strength. That's the point blank to it.
Yeah, and I think when you look at USC's defense, this epitomizes what we were talking about earlier from Alex Grinch. There are two polar opposites here statistically when you look at this matchup, and that is they rank in the bottom half of the national rankings in yards allowed per game, which you know my stance on that. I don't put as much on yards per game without context. You need more context, because if they're winning a lot of games big, then guess what? Teams aren't going to throw as much. But then the other part of it is style of play. What do our other teams just, you know, built to throw the ball more, all those type of things. But when you look at it, their yards allowed per attempt is very low. They give up a lot of yards per attempt. They're in the bottom half of the country in yards allowed per completion. They're in the bottom half of the country in efficiency defense. And then lo and behold, they lead the nation in interceptions and they're 12th in sacks. And that's kind of what they do. I mean, that's where they're at, Ryan. And it's that it's not even out. You call it opportunistic. I call it just risky. It's just, yes, they're gonna do a lot of stuff, and if it works, they're gonna shut you down. And if it doesn't work, or if your quarterback doesn't handle it, or whatever the case may be, then you know it'll work. And you know, you get kind of these really polar opposite results for them.
Yep.
But you know, you say, well, you know, they have a hard time stopping the pass, but that's the danger of this matchup is Notre Dame has not been a team that is real consistently good at attacking with the pass game. Now, we saw them rip Navy apart in the first half, and then what Navy do with their adjustments? They just brought, you know, did a couple extra pressures and took away the quick game, and all of a sudden Notre Dame couldn't move the football. Uh-huh. And I think that's to me is the danger of this. And you know, you talk about, I think trends are important in football, right? I think how you're playing recently matters. Sure. And if you look at USC in their last five games, Ryan, against Utah, Arizona, Cal, Colorado, and UCLA, so not exactly like a murderer's row of opposition. Mm-hmm. They've given up 328.6 passing yards per game in their last five games. They're giving up 8.4 yards per attempt in their last five games, and they're giving up 13.0 yards per completion in the last five games. So they're heading in the wrong direction. And the only reason that number is not worse is because Colorado only passed for 124 yards and averaged 5.9 yards per attempt, because they're awful.
It's so bad, man. It's so bad.
Yeah. Utah went for 424. Arizona went for 380. Cal went for 406. And then UCLA this past week went for 309.
Utah and Cal are not built off of being passing offenses either, right? Well, Utah wants to be ground and pound, control. Yeah. Cam Rising makes good decisions. He's not a guy that should be throwing for 400.
Here's what Utah did the next four games. So against USC, 68.9% completions, 424 yards, 9.4 yards per attempt. Here's what they did in the next four games. Against Washington State, 175 yards, 63 completions, 6.5 yards per attempt. Against Arizona, 52% completions, 151 yards, 6.0 yards per attempt. Against Stanford, 235 yards, 61.8% completion, 6.9 yards per attempt. And then this past week against Oregon, 55.3 completion percentage, 170 yards, 4.5 yards per attempt, 0 touchdowns, 4 picks.
Yeah.
So to your point, the only other team that they really threw the ball well on, the only other teams they've thrown the ball well on besides UCLA, USC, is they went for 287 against UCLA's pass defense, which, as you and I saw on Saturday, isn't very good. Yeah. And have seen throughout the year isn't very good, which is ultimately why we picked USC. We wanted to pick UCLA, but the reason we couldn't do it is because the quarterback, I didn't trust the quarterback to make game-winning plays. But number two, they don't have a very – their defense is not good, especially their pass defense is not good. And then they had 260 yards against Arizona State, who's not very good. And then they had 352 yards against Southern Utah. But they went for 6.8 in a win over – in a loss to Florida. And, you know, they're not a great – they're not a great passing offense, Utah. And they went for 424 against USC's defense. So, to your point – you know, they're giving up yards in ways where you're like, man, like these aren't even teams that are necessarily great at throwing the football. I mean, they give up 400 yards to Cal the next week against Oregon State. Cal goes for 147, yeah. Right? I mean, so yeah, you're correct, Ryan. They're not trending in the right direction, and they're been especially getting gashed lately. And why does that matter? Because what you often see. And this happened with Notre Dame and Brian Van Gorder. If you remember in 2016 for Notre Dame, when, you know, 2014, excuse me, for Notre Dame, when you looked at early in the season, Notre Dame's defense looked pretty good, right? They, you know, beat Rice and, you know, gave up a lot of yards, beat Rice, didn't give up a lot of yards or points, right? That game was a blowout. Then the next game, you beat Michigan 31-0. You only give up 289 yards. The next game, you beat Purdue 30-14. You only give up 290 yards. You beat Syracuse the next week, give up 429 yards, but only 15 points, and Syracuse got some yards late. The next week against Stanford in a win, you give up only 205 yards. And then that's when the wheels came off. 516 to North Carolina, you give up 31 points to Florida State, 454 against Navy, 412 against Arizona State, 547 against Northwestern, a team that had never gone even to 400 at that point in time of the season. 409 to Louisville, who had a freshman quarterback at the time named Reggie Bonifant, who eventually moved to wide receiver.
And then playing running back in the NFL right now.
Exactly. You gave up 577 yards to USC and then 436 to LSU. And that year that USC had 577 yards on Notre Dame, Steve Sarkisian called off the dogs. If you go back and watch that game, he could have scored 70 on Notre Dame that game. And he respected the rivalry and was like, this is a wounded team. They're very beat up. We're not going to embarrass him, right? And kudos to him because he could have. And then Brian Kelly returned that favor in 2017 because Chip Long wanted to put about two, three more touchdowns on USC in 2017. And Brian Kelly was like, no, we're not running it up on him because he remembered what they, you know, that they knew that USC, they went on like this, like 12-minute drive at one point in time. Remember that game with Max Whittaken as the backup quarterback?
Yep.
You know, so you know, what happened? Injuries didn't really set into like Louisville. What happened before? Teams finally had now we have five games of film on this guy. We've figured his tendencies out. We know what he's going to do on third down. We know what he likes to do. We know where his pressures are going to come from. And now we're going to rip it up. Mm-hmm. And that's what Notre Dame needs to do in this game. They have, look, I'm not saying, Ryan, they got to throw for 300 yards. I'm not saying that. If they throw for 300 yards, they're going to win this game in a blowout, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that happening. Notre Dame hasn't thrown for 300 yards all game or all season. Which is just nuts to say to me. I'm sorry. I think that's nutty to say that they've only gone over 270 yards once all year, but that's a different conversation for a different day. But we've seen Drew Pine against this kind of secondary in the past have some success, and at least for a half, and that's what he's going to have to do. They're going to have to do some stuff early that Tommy Reese is going to have to generate some things early, Ryan, that get Drew comfortable and let USC know you can't just – heat our run game up because we're going to have this for you. That's going to make you pay. And if they can do that, then they should be able to score a lot. Cause I don't think this is going to be a 2017 game. I don't think this is a game you can score 21 offensive points and win like you did against Clemson, you know, cause you can't bank on a block punt for a touchdown and an interception at the 11, you know, a pick six, an interception at the 11 that also sets up another touchdown. You're gonna have to move the ball. You're gonna have to score.
Right. And it's going to be really interesting too, Brian, because I'm looking forward to seeing what Tommy Reese does early on in this football game, because to your point, you need to get Drew in some type of rhythm. You need to in this football game. And the one thing that USC has done well, aside from forced turnovers, is they have gotten after the quarterback pretty well. I mean, you look at that number, they have 33 sacks on the season, which ranks 12th in the nation right now. I mentioned Tulley before. I mean, he's got 11 sacks on the season. Hunter Echols, who is a former pretty good recruit, it's kind of been around the block a little bit at a couple different programs, has had his flashes at times. We mentioned Eric Gentry. Like, they're going to bring some pressure from the second level as well. But I really think that this is a game where, again, I know we talk about this every week, and we're not going to talk about keys to victory as much during the show, But the offensive line, I think, really just has to do well against this defensive front, because they might not be big, might not be great against the run, but what they can do is they can move and they get after the passer a little bit. So just looking at that sack number for USC, that's a matchup where, because Notre Dame has been pretty good with not allowing a ton of pressure, with not allowing a ton of sacks, but now they're going against a team that's kind of how they make their living defensively, is being able to force pressure and being able to force turnovers.
Go to the next matchup, Ryan. That's going to be the Notre Dame scoring offense against the USC scoring defense. And again, this is where it starts to even out, right? And this is where you say, okay, this is going to make it this interesting. Notre Dame ranks higher in points per game and USC, points allowed. Notre Dame ranks higher in yards per play. USC is better in the red zone. Notre Dame is significantly better in third down offense compared to their third down defense. And then the turnover aspect is very, very fascinating, Ryan, because Notre Dame turned the ball over three times in the first two games. They turned it over three times against Marshall. They turned it over twice against Stanford, twice against UNLV. Really, since then, they've been pretty good, I think, about not turning the ball over. You had the one turnover against Syracuse, which was just not a good turnover, but it ended up not proving detrimental. You had the turnover against Navy, and then you had the turnover last week against Boston College. And I'm even trying to remember what that one was. You had a lost fumble. Oh, it was on a punt. It wasn't even the Notre Dame offense. It was on a punt return from Matt Salerno. So,
oh, yes. Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because I'm like, I don't remember the offense turning the ball over. They scored on their first eight possessions. But when this team protects the football, Ryan, they're pretty good. Well, USC is really good at forcing turnovers. And that, to me, is the concern I have, is if USC can get Drew Pine kind of a little rattled, get him rushing throws, if he's stepping into the pocket. Look, USC is going to – they're going to get their hands up. They're going to do what every other team has done. They're going to try to tip a pass and get an interception. And they've had a lot of those type of picks this year, Ryan, a lot of those kind of tip pass interceptions, which is good. That's one good thing they do. They clearly practice that type of stuff. But you can't have Drew Pine making those kind of mistakes in this game. You can't. You have to play clean. And that to me is the biggest part of this matchup. And, Notre Dame's red zone offense has gotten better and better and better all throughout the year. It's now in the top 25 nationally. USC's not very good. So when you get in the red zone, touchdowns they have to be touchdowns, right? That's going to be a key too. You're not going to beat USC kicking a bunch of field goals. So yeah. this is the interesting part. I mean, I think, advantage for Notre Dame in the run game. I think the pass game is even statistically. I think Notre Dame has a personnel advantage. On the skill positions, it really comes down to Drew Pine. And I think the same thing is true here. Notre Dame has a talent advantage over USC's defense everywhere except one position. And that's the big question mark. That's quarterback. And so this game really, and I hate to put this kind of pressure on it, but this game really hinges on Tommy Rees being able to get Drew Pine comfortable and then Drew going out and making the reads and making the throws, executing his technique, staying back in the pocket, getting the ball out, not forcing mistakes, not doing some of the things that can get him in trouble. If he can play clean, this Notre Dame's going to score points. Will it be enough to win? That we don't know. And that we'll discuss more on Friday. But it'll certainly give him a chance to score enough to be in the game in the fourth quarter. And that's really where you want to be. Because that's when you can wear USC down, hopefully, and, put the game away. But that's going to be the key. Drew Pine's got to play well, and you've got to protect the football. Those are going to be vitally important in this game, because USC forces a lot of turnovers, and it'll seem a little bit, they don't turn it over themselves.
No, they don't. They don't. I mean, we'll get into that, obviously, but I'm pretty sure Caleb Williams only has, two interceptions all the year or something like three. That? Like three interceptions? Yeah.
So he threw a third this past weekend against UCLA. Right. So that was what you're looking at his numbers were going into that game, Ryan. So
That was a really bad interception against UCLA, by the way. Number 20 was like an underneath zone. But
you know what I love about him, though, Ryan? Didn't phase him one bit.
At all. No,
didn't phase him. Look, guys, you're gonna throw interceptions sometimes. But you can't let it phase you. And he just came out the next year and was like, I'm fine. I got this. And that's very
true.
That's what I love about watching a kid play. I really do. Like, I hate USC, they're a rival. But I also love talented football players and good football players, and that kid's a really good football player.
He's a stud, man. He's a
fantastic. We'll get into him here in a little bit, but
the one thing I was going to say that worries me a little bit about USC's defense, and it all goes hand in hand, right? We talked about the forced turnovers, you talked about the sacks. Well, what causes that to happen? You mentioned some tip passes. Well, they have good length on that unit overall, right? They do. Tully is 6'4" with pretty long arms, playing one defensive end. Hunter Eccles is a pretty long kid at 6'4". He's a little bit more of a lighter stand-up rusher, but he's got length for him. Eric Gentry is the weirdest body type I've ever seen of a linebacker at 6'6", 200, but the one thing he has, he's got length. No doubt about that. Kalen Bullock.
Solomon Bird's going to play a lot as well at end as a rotation. He's 6'4". Nick Figueroa, 6'5". Yep. He's not real athletic, but he's long. You know?
He's long. Kalen Bullock, their best safety, is 6'3". He's a longer guy. Mekhi Blackman, cornerback, is 6' with decent length. I mean, so they have length on that level. So for me, Notre Dame needs to be crisp. They need to get the ball out on time, and that all comes back to the quarterback. It does, right? Like, you need to be able to get through your reads quickly, get the ball out, not telegraph passes, not stare stuff down. You need to get the ball out fast, because that's where that length really starts to hurt you, is when you double clutch or you're staring things down or you're not sure of where you're going to go with the football. Those things happen, and ball security just in general, and this is past Drew Pine for a second, is going to be big. We haven't talked at all about Audric Estime in recent weeks from a negative perspective, because he's kind of cleaned up the fumbling issue he had during the middle of the season, right? So that needs to continue. Notre Dame can't shoot themselves in the foot against this team, because you don't want to give their offense extra possessions. Like, that is the worst thing that you can do against USC, is give them extra possessions. This is a team that is built off of, we're going to give the offense the ball as many times as possible. We're going to force 24 turnovers so far this year, and let Caleb Williams and let Jordan Addison and all those dudes go make plays and score points. Right. That's how USC is built off of. So I think being, I don't want to say, because I don't want it to be a thing where Notre Dame is tentative offensively, not afraid to take a chance, but also
you got to attack. You just got to play clean. That's really what it, this isn't about conservative football. You're not going to beat them being conservative, and running the ball a ton doesn't equal conservative. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, right? If they're going to load the box, let's hit Braden Lindsay on a reverse or something like that. You know, let's beat him with a screen. It's just about, you've got to have a smart game plan that doesn't expose Drew Pine to a lot of the things that he's not good at. He's going to have to do some of that, but don't expose him to a lot of that. And then when you get in those situations, you got to play clean.
Yep.
That's the kryptonite to USC is clean football. Don't give up negatives and don't turn the ball over. That's kryptonite to their defense. I mean, absolute kryptonite, because like you said, that's what they're all about. That's what their defense is all about. And when they don't do a lot, when they don't do that, and they don't force a lot of negatives, they have problems. Here's the deal. Their defense, as we talked about before, let's go back to it. Tackles for loss, they rank 48th in the country. Sacks, they rank 12th. You know how many tackles for loss they had in their one loss this year, Ryan? One against Utah. They had one tackle for loss, and I believe that was a sack, if I remember correctly. No, it was not a sack. So, you know, you had – how many sacks did you have against UCLA? One.
Yeah.
Right? How many sacks did they have against Oregon State? Zero.
Hmm.
Right? And so when you look at when this team has struggled, they're not getting pressure. They're not creating negatives. Teams are playing ahead of schedule, and they're able to win games. I mean, Oregon State, right? The reason Oregon State lost that game, 4 turnovers. That's why they lost that game. Utah turned it over once. Why did UCLA lose that game? 4 turnovers. I mean, they turned it over 4 times. USC turned it over, I believe, what, once? Right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And they still barely won by 3 points.
Yep.
Over a good UCLA team. But that's the point. The thing is, if you protect the football, Stanford's another example. Stanford did a lot of good things against USC, but what killed them? First long drive of the game, Tanner McKee throws an interception in the end zone. I believe it was off of a tip pass. I believe, right? That's the thing. You're going to move on them, but you got to score. And the teams that Stanford played with USC, but couldn't turn the ball over too much. Oregon State outplayed USC, turned the ball over 4 times. Utah didn't. Utah eliminated the negatives against USC. And that's why they were able to score a lot of points. You know, UCLA did in some areas, but the turnovers killed them. You eliminate one of those turnovers, and UCLA likely wins that football game.
Mm-hmm.
And that ultimately, Ryan, is why I went with USC, because I didn't think Caleb Williams is going to fold, and I thought that the other kid was going to make those kind of mistakes. He's had a heck of a year. I don't take anything away from him, but I just, in this kind of game, he's just, I just don't think he's good enough. It comes down to Caleb Williams versus Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I'm taking Caleb Williams every day of the week. You could say the same thing about this matchup, but the difference is Notre Dame is not as dependent on Drew Pine as UCLA is on Dorian Thompson-Robinson to be a playmaker.
That's true.
And that's the difference.
And if I could add one last thing, Brian, I think that you mentioned it a little bit there, but you need to finish drives in the end zone. That's like another big thing, right, is that USC is going to score, guys, right? Like they are. Notre Dame's not going to shut out USC. Like, can we just start there, right? And it was awesome seeing Blake Groupie get back on a good track last week, right? 3-for-3 field goal, 7-for-7 on all his kicks. It was great because he had been struggling. But this is not a game where you're going to win by kicking field goals. And we see by these rankings, USC has struggled keeping teams out of the end zone when they got into the red zone. And Notre Dame has started to really push that envelope to the right direction, ranking 25th with their touchdown percentage. So when Notre Dame gets those opportunities, because they will have those opportunities, in my opinion, they have to finish drives. They have to. Against this type of offense the USC has, field goals are not going to win this football game.
Right. Ryan, we're going to move over to the defense here in a second, but just a reminder, we will have a mailbag at the end of this. So if you do have some questions, some people have already thrown some in. We've already got about 12 of them starred. Feel free to do so now. We would appreciate that. Let's move over to the defensive matchup, Ryan, and this is where you're going to get more good on good, I think, in this matchup. And I think right now you look at this particular run game versus run defense matchup, and I think it's pretty even. And it just depends on which version of Notre Dame shows up. And there, you know, obviously I think USC not having Travis Dye hurts them, but they have run the ball. They did run the ball okay last week. A lot of that was about Caleb Williams, though. I thought that what we saw last week was is they needed a little bit more of his magic last week to be effective running the football. And one thing they did also last week that I thought was really effective, you know, Austin Jones had a good game, 120 yards. He had a nice performance. But what they did also, and since he's been in the lineup, they do a pretty good job of getting him the ball in space with like little simple swing routes, you know, so where they're not as dependent because their offensive line has turned into a pretty good pass blocking unit, right?
Yep.
Which we'll get into, but they're not a great run blocking unit. They're more like just like they were at Oklahoma some years, where their run game success comes from scheme and teams playing the pass. So what they've done this year is they do a lot of getting the ball out to their backs. I mean, Austin Jones has 16 catches for 61 yards. If I remember correctly, Travis Dye had a decent number of receptions this year as well, Ryan. Yes, he had 21 for 202, and a lot of that stuff is just little swing checkdowns, right? And you're sitting there thinking, okay, you've covered deep pretty well, and all of a sudden either Caleb Williams runs or they check it down, and that's almost like they'll do it too, where they did against UCLA, where it was a swing screen. They're throwing the screen, and it's basically like a toss play. Which you know has to be looked at as that. So, I mean, Austin Jones is a good football player. I don't think he's as physical of a runner as Travis Dye is, but he's athletic. You know, he's got some ability. So their run game's not going to be terrible because Travis Dye is out. It just means there's just now kind of a one style where Jones and Relik Brown are both fast slashers. Yes. Travis Dye was a slasher, but he also had some physicality to him. And I think they miss that. But that's what Caleb Williams added against UCLA. The question is, do you really want to dial that up the next 2 weeks with Caleb Williams kind of being needed to provide some of that or not? He's capable of it, but do you really want him taking that beating? Because if you lose Caleb Williams from this offense, it's a whole different football team. Football team.
I mean, it's all due respect to Miller Moss, but he's not Caleb Williams, right? I mean, to your point, he's a talented kid. But Caleb Williams is the difference, I think, in the run game right now, Brian, to your point, because – well, how I see USC, and you let me know if you see it any differently, this is a very movement-based offense from a running game perspective, right? Like, they are not the most powerful offensive line of all time, but they do have a couple good athletes up front, right?
Like, angles.
Angles. They work angles tremendously well. They create nice creases based upon movement, and guys like Austin Jones have enough juice and explosiveness to create some plays, some chunk plays, which is a testament to them because they actually aren't very good as far as they allow a lot of tackles for loss on their offense from the run game perspective, but yet they still average a pretty nice yard per carry average. Mm-hmm. So they create some explosive plays, but it's much more to your point. I just want to reiterate it. They're not a power running team. They are a team that wants to make teams. You want to create movement with your movements, work angles, and create creases in that way. So you could expect a lot more inside and outside zone. Some stuff, like Brian said, as far as like, hey, let's hit some swing screens to the perimeter. We're trying to get guys in a lot more space than just get downhill and read and react to what you're seeing up front, right? Like, these is much more space-oriented offense from a running game perspective.
Now, Notre Dame, on the other hand, Ryan, is a very interesting team when you look at it, really how their run defense has been this season. And rough start, right? I mean, Ohio State didn't put up great numbers, 172 yards, 4.9, but that's because Ohio State didn't really run the ball a ton or successfully in the first half. When it became money time, Ohio State was able to lean on Notre Dame and wear them down late, and their run game in the fourth quarter was the difference. Late third quarter, fourth quarter was the difference in that game. Next week against Marshall, run defense really struggled, Ryan, and they couldn't stop. They couldn't stop a kid who was working in a lumberyard or like something like a Lowe's type of place, you know, the year before, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you come out and you do a pretty good job against Cal's rushing offense, give 112 yards. Most of that was scrambles. They had like a 20-yard run. The rest of it was like scrambles by Jack Plummer. And then you completely shut down North Carolina. BYU has a couple big runs. And then since then, the run defense really, outside of the 170-plus yard run against UNLV, the run defense really since the end of the Marshall game has been pretty outstanding. If you really break it down, and I'm going to pull up the numbers, and the one thing I'm going to do to put this in a proper context is take the Navy game out, simply because it's not so much about taking it out because they gave up yards, but taking it out because it's a triple option. It's a different brand. It's a completely different animal. But in Notre Dame's since the BYU game, when the rush defense was not great, in the six games, the 5 games against non-option teams since then, Notre Dame's only given up 90 yards a game rushing.
That's awesome.
And they're only giving up 2.9 yards per carry.
Yep.
So the run defense has been pretty good. Now, part of that has been they've played some teams that aren't good at running the football, like Stanford's not very good at running the football. Boston College is not very good at running the football. They're ranked last in the country, and Notre Dame held them below their season average. But Syracuse is a pretty good running team, and they held them 61 yards. You know, Clemson's a pretty good running team. They held them to 90 yards. And so, you know, those teams, they were able to really shut down their ability to run the football. And so we've seen them, you know, against good teams and bad teams, that they've really been able to slow them down and be successful against them. So this makes this a very fascinating matchup, because I'm going to say it right now. And by the way, in the game before they played Notre Dame, Clemson rushed for 293 yards against Syracuse. In the game after they played Notre Dame against a team that's now ranked in the top 25, they beat Louisville. They beat Louisville 31-16, rushed for 248 yards, and then they ran for 207 yards against Miami. So, point being, that was an anomaly for Clemson, and Notre Dame completely shut them down in that game. So, we're going to talk a lot about the pass game, and we'll kind of get into the keys to victory, Ryan. But this is a matchup where that's on paper pretty even, that Notre Dame can't have it be even practically on the game. They cannot allow USC to be balanced. And that's the one thing that UCLA could not do. UCLA could not make them balanced. Yep. And I mean, make them unbalanced. They could not make them one. And it may sound crazy. You want them to throw the football. That's what they're going to do. Now, here's an interesting thing that I'm going to ask you about, Ryan. Is there merit in this game to doing kind of, I don't think there is, but I want to get, if you disagree, Clark Lee, I won't even ask. I'm just going to come out and say it, and then you can rebut it.
Okay.
Clark Lee had a very interesting strategy against USC.
Okay.
Which was much more of a traditional air raid, in that they did not run the football. Like, Lincoln Riley's an air raid guy, but he's an air raid guy like Mike Shanahan was a West Coast guy, right? Yeah. In that Mike Shanahan wasn't your traditional West Coast guy, because he was such a believer in, like, he combined West Coast with Alex Gibbs, right?
Outside zone. And
it was a different animal. And so I kind of feel like Lincoln Riley and Phil Longo are sort of different animals of the air raid relative to the founders, Hal Mumme, Mike Leach, guys like that, and then the tree. So, like, Lincoln Riley is from the tree of Mike Leach. He was at Texas Tech, but he's taken in a different direction that I think – means that you can't do what Notre Dame did to Graham Harrell's air raid, which is force them to run the ball because they can't beat you running the ball. I don't think that would works against USC. I actually think in this version of USC, you actually have to make them you want them to throw because because they have to throw. You have to take away the run game. You have to take away the backs and mm-hmm. all of that entails, Ryan. Do you agree or disagree with that sentiment?
I mean, as a defensive guy, I always want to stop the run. I don't care what the team is. I want the team to be one-dimensional, and I'll take my chances against the pass. I will, because there's a lot of good things that Caleb Williams and just the general in offense could do passing the football, but there's also a lot of negatives that could happen too, right? Sacks, forced fumbles, interceptions, bad throws. Like, there's a lot of negatives, tip passes. There's a lot of negatives that can happen passing the football. A lot more negatives that can happen comparative to running the football. And the worst thing that you can do is, okay, in theory, you want USC to run the football so that you are designing the defense to play the pass and Caleb Williams doesn't kill you. But then I would argue that most likely if you are rushing the ball well, if you're USC, you're probably going to throw the ball well too, because it's just hard to counteract both. So I want to shut one down, and and this is the traditionalist to me, I always want to stop the run. And this is not something particularly unique to USC. If I was talking about North Carolina, if I was talking about Clemson, if I was talking about any team that's just a different type of team, different systems, different philosophies, I want to stop the run. I do. I want to make a team one-dimensional. I want them to try to throw the football. From there, your guys got to make plays. But right here, Brian, like, this can't be a game where you're like, Austin Jones ran for 100-something yards, right? Like, that's if that happens and Notre Dame gives up a decent amount of rushing yards and Austin Jones and Relique Brown have a couple of nice runs and they are able to control this.
Caleb Williams is going off. Right.
Exactly. If that happens, then Notre Dame's going to lose this game, in my opinion. Like, you can't let that happen. You have to force this team to be one-dimensional, and you have to take your chances in the pass, and you have to force them into some bad decisions, and your defensive line has to play well. So I've always been a stickler to let's stop the run first, and then we'll force mistakes in the passing game. That's always been my philosophy personally.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I think that's key here too. I mean, you can, if US in this, look, this is, and how do we see, I mean, this is how it was at Oklahoma. Right. I mean, you look at last year, why they almost get upset by Tulane. Part of it was they rushed for 116 yards, made them really one dimensional. And then that forced them into mistakes and misses that allowed them to stay in the game. Right. Barely beat West Virginia last year, ran for 57 yards, barely beat Kansas State last year, ran for 131 yards, lost to Baylor, ran for 82 yards. I mean, this has kind of been the formula against Oklahoma for a long time is, if you can make them one-dimensional, you can keep them out of the end zone. And even some games that they won in the past, Ryan, where they won games but didn't score a ton of points because they weren't able to run the football effectively. Going back to 2020, they had 76 yards against Baylor that game and only scored 27 points. In the Big 12 title game against Oklahoma State or Iowa State, they ran for 120 yards and only scored 27 points. If Notre Dame can hold them to 27 points, you feel like you're going to have a shot to win this game, right? Well, then they go out into the bowl game against Florida and rush for 435 yards and beat Florida 55-20, right? I mean, if they run the ball on you, Lincoln Riley. I'm going to go back and look at this. He doesn't have a lot of losses where he's run for 200 yards. I'm going to actually go back and look at this. So 2021, no losses with 200 yards. 2020, No loss. I mean, their two losses that year were 130 and 114 yards rushing. 2019, their losses, they had 102 and 97 yards rushing. I mean, you know, again, picking up a pattern here. Okay, so last time they lost a game where they ran for 200 yards was all the way back in 2018. They lost to Texas 48-45. So, yeah. I mean, it's so, just it doesn't happen often. They don't lose and they run for two. They don't lose if they rush for 200 yards. And then the only time before that, Ryan, was in the overtime game against Georgia, in the in the playoff where they outshot Georgia. And that USC's not that version of Oklahoma, not yet. Yeah. They have the quarterback for it, but just the overall package. He's in year one. I mean, they could eventually get to that, but in year one, he hasn't been able to recruit the line the way he wants to. He hasn't recruited, you know, a lot of the skill. Hasn't been in a system for 2 or 3 years and all that type of stuff where they can learn all the ins and outs of what he wants to do, which gives him greater versatility as a play caller, right? So, I mean, I think they'll eventually get there if he stays at USC, but they're not there yet. They have to be balanced if they're going to win. And when this team is balanced, because Notre Dame doesn't have the kind of offense Georgia had that year, they don't have – I mean, their backs are good, but, you know, that team also had a – this was just a better team. I mean, Georgia was national runners-up that year.
Yep.
So they're going to have to keep the run game in check. That to me is the biggest key. The biggest key to stopping Oklahoma, in my opinion.
Brian, the analytics crowd is going to hate you so much. You're telling me running the football matters? Yeah. No way. I don't believe it. Yeah. You can pass the ball every play and win. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I love the sarcasm coming out of it because those people are idiots.
Dude, I have so many conversations on Twitter where people try to tell me running the football doesn't matter. I'm just like, okay, all right. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. I mean, maybe in the NFL, because nobody does. Like, that's the thing is NFL is such a different game than college. There's so many more teams. There's so many different types of football. I mean, there's not a ton of diversity in the NFL, and there's not. Even if you look at a team like the Titans, and I don't know if the Titans are still this way, but in past years where they're just like this really – they're still doing a lot of similar concepts. They're just emphasizing this over that. There's no, like, air raid versus – pro style versus triple option versus spread option. I mean, there's so much different stuff. And I just think you don't see a lot of teams in college football that are good that don't run the football.
You're not wrong.
At least not good consistently.
Yep.
You know, you've got to be able to run the football consistently. And, you know, like you look at Mississippi State, they're probably the closest thing to that. And I'm looking down at like the bottom part of the country and there's just not a lot of teams down there that are any good. Iowa's not very good. I'm looking at it here, Washington State and Texas Tech. Mississippi State. But what's the problem that Mississippi State has? When they lose, it's because their offense can't score, because when teams can take their pass away, they have nothing. They have nothing. That's why Lincoln Riley's offense is so much better than Mike Leach's nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. It's why Phil Longo's offense is so much better than Mike Leach's nowadays, because it's less slump-proof. It's more slump-proof, in my opinion, than what we see again in other games. And why did Phil Longo have the issue that he had against Georgia Tech this past week, Ryan? What happened to North Carolina in that game? Couldn't run football.
Yep.
Right? This team is not good at running football. So they had 163 yards rushing, and I think like 70 of it came on one carry, like early in the game. They had that long touchdown run early, and then after that, couldn't run football. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's what's really hurt them. That's why this version of his offense is not as good as past offenses, and it's been so reliant on Drake May just being unbelievable,
yes.
Right? And that's where, you know, he can't put what's allowed Caleb Williams to be so mistake-free beyond his talent. I mean, his talent's part of that too, right?
Sure.
I was having this conversation with a buddy last night, and we were talking about, you know, John Elway, and he's a Steeler fan, and you know, the pass that John Elway threw to get a first down on third down to Shannon Sharpe in the 1997 AFC championship game, or excuse me, divisional game. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, the guy almost intercepted it. And I was like, no, he didn't. And we went back and watched the play. And he didn't. And he said, why? Because John Elway threw it 100 miles an hour. And there was no way that guy was going to get his hand on it. It was like Shannon Sharpe was catching that ball, whether Shannon Sharpe wanted to catch the ball or not. You know, I mean, that's just the way he threw it. Well, Caleb Williams can do some of that. Like, that throw against UCLA where he's running to his left there and put on Twitter, like there's like maybe two, three guys in all of college football that can make that throw with that velocity.
There's not outside of Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes. Right. There's not many guys in the NFL that do that either.
So he's going to make some of those plays, but overall what helps him be a guy that just doesn't turn a ball over is that they are able to make teams respect all parts of their game. And Lincoln Riley is not afraid to come out and say, if you're going to like overplay our pass game, that's fine. We're going to go off today with our run game. We're going to go off and we're going to beat you up the middle running. And we're going to beat you over the middle throwing because you're trying to protect the outside so much. And I think that's why you have to be able to control the run game with your box. You have to be able to control the run game with your box and then be able to protect outside. Cause you can't stop both. Right. I mean, I don't think so. The one you can stop to me is the one up front. And so it's going to, you got to get Jason Adamiola back. JD Bertrand has to keep doing what he's been doing. And then I'm very curious to see how they use Maris Luofau in this game to attack. I'm very curious about that. That's going to be a very fascinating aspect of this game. So we'll see how that goes. This next part, Ryan, this is one of the good on good matchups, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame's got some interesting numbers in this regard, because here's a couple things that to me are very fascinating about Notre Dame's numbers. You know, their yards per completion is not great. A lot of that comes down from the North Carolina game, where they gave up some, garbage plays late. They averaged 17.7 yards per catch. That's not how that game played out, right? I mean, a lot of that came after it was 38-14. They've been prone at times to giving up a big play here or there, but when you look at their yards per game, their yards per attempt, their efficiency numbers and sacks, those are the numbers that really tell you the tale of how good you are on pass defense. And Notre Dame has proven to be a very good pass defense this year. And yes, they've beaten up on teams that aren't good throwing the football, but they've also done a really good job, Ryan, in my opinion, against teams that can throw the football, because USC right now in passing yards per game ranks fourth nationally in passing yards per game. But Notre Dame's also played North Carolina, who ranks sixth, and Ohio State, who ranks 17th in passing yards per game. And then Ohio State, I believe, is third in yards per attempt. USC is seventh, tied for seventh with North Carolina. So Notre Dame has played teams that have dynamic receiving cores and really good quarterbacks this year.
Yep.
Now, you could argue C.J. Williams is the most talented of all the quarterbacks they've played, and I really wouldn't push back on that, to be complete, as arm talent-wise. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely a better runner than C.J. Stroud, but he's very similar to Drake May in that regard, right? And they've played receiving cores with a lot of speed. And so this is not a new test for Notre Dame, but it doesn't mean that, oh, because they did well then, they're going to do well now. They still have to play, be on top of their game to stop this pass offense, because ultimately, at the end of the day, if you hold them to 100 yards rushing but give up 450 passing, you're still going to lose, right? And so that's going to be a key. Is you're going to have to find ways to create minuses for USC, whether it's incompletions, tackles for loss on their perimeter screen game, breakups, tipped passes, interceptions, all of that. It's the whole gamut. You're going to need to get some of that. You got what it comes down to, Ryan. You've needed to create as much inefficiency as possible with the USC pass game. It's much easier said than done, but as the statistics show, it's much easier said than done, but that's what's going to be the key. But Notre Dame has done that. That's what they did against Ohio State, and that's what they did against North Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. So that's
– And they have a lot of good athletes on this USC team, right? Like, we've talked about Jordan Addison already a little bit. We're talking about Taj Washington, Brandon Rice, Austin Jones working out of the backfield. They have some guys that can do damage after the catch. And I think that that's first for me, Brian, is that this team needs to be, and they have been in recent weeks, they have to be really good on the edges tackling. Like, I think Benjamin Morrison's done a nice job. Cam Hart, when he's been out there, has done a nice job being able to tackle in that screen game and not let those 3 to 4 yard gains turn into 8 to 9, right? And then get you into second and shorts and third and shorts. And this is a team where, again, this isn't unique to USC. This is unique to pretty much every, well, this is unique there. This is not unique. It is a similarity between every team. You want to get them in second and longs and third and longs. You want to, because it's just, it's the situation where now they are limited with what they can do and how they can operate as an offense. So Notre Dame needs to tackle well in the perimeter. I believe that wholeheartedly. And this can't be, and I've seen people already say this in the chat earlier in the show, Brian, where, hey, you know, Cam Hart or Benjamin Morrison need to go and shadow Jordan Addison. And I disagree. I disagree tremendously.
Do what you do.
Your offense, your secondary needs to be a collaborative effort. You need to be good across the board because this team has multiple weapons. This isn't just the Jordan Addison show. Is Jordan Addison great? Yeah, of course he is. Very good football player. There's a reason he won the Biletnikoff last year, right? There's a reason he's going to be drafted pretty high in the draft this year. He's a good football player, really good college player, no doubt about it. But Taj Washington's a good football player too. Brandon Rice is a good football player. Kyle Ford has made some plays. Like, they have receivers that have the ability to beat you if put in a bad, put into a good situation for themselves. So Notre Dame across the board, this is going to take a collaborative effort from the Ben Morrisons of the world, from the Brandon Josephs of the world, from the Xavier Wattses of the world, from the Tariq Bracies, from the Clarence Lewises, for everyone across the board. This is a make it or break it game for the secondary. They need to, because they've been a strength, much better than anybody gave him credit for from a fan base perspective before the season. Notre Dame's secondary has played really well, and it's been a good pass defense for Notre Dame. This is right up there as their biggest test. You mentioned against North Carolina. You mentioned against Ohio State. This is another potent passing attack with a great quarterback and a lot of weapons. Notre Dame's secondary needs to come to play on Saturday. This is a vital matchup to figuring out who's going to win this game.
Well, it's kind of funny, Ryan. You know, Roger Dodger, our resident USC fan, has made a comment about how let me just go here real quick and find this real fast because I want to pull this up. So there's a lot of lower numbers on the right. Again, this is why we provide context. Notre Dame has pretty low numbers on the left when you consider they've played two top 10 pass offenses this year. The highest ranked pass defense in the Pac-12 from a yards allowed per game standpoint is Utah, who ranks 50th nationally. The next best is 59th at Oregon State, who did a pretty good job shutting them down. So, I mean, you're talking about, you have to look at the context of the fact that the Pac-12 just does not have very good pass defenses. The one team that's pretty good at keeping yards and yards per attempt and yards per completion down is Oregon State. Oregon State ranks in the top 25 in yards allowed per attempt, and they rank in the top 25 in yards allowed per completion. How many points did USC score in that game? 17.
Uh-huh.
Right. So again, what Oregon State was able to do is they were able to create inefficiency in the USC pass game. And that's something that a lot of teams in that conference have tried to do and can't because they don't have the coaching, nor do they have the players. And this is what you and I talked about a while ago when we were talking about a matchup that Oregon State had recently. You know, they've got a pass defense that usually is pretty good at creating inefficiency. And that's what they're able to do against USC is they were able to create some inefficiency. Now, everyone else has tried to do it, but no one else has been able to, you know, have success with it. They held USC to 180 yards and 44.4 yards per attempt. That was a bit of an off day for USC. It's part of it. Caleb was missing some throws he normally makes. But the other part of it is USC's defensive backs were very physical and very aggressive at getting hands on the football. And that's going to be a big key. And the pass rush got to him pretty consistently. And there wasn't a lot of places for him to go. They did a really good job controlling the rush lanes, I thought, in that game as well. It was a really well-coached game, really well-executed game. At the end of the day, though, USC won. Why? Because their offense couldn't score. And that's my big concern. Or Oregon State's offense couldn't score. That's my big concern this game is even if your defense plays great, if your offense doesn't step up, you're still going to lose. And that's the key is you they're going to move the ball. They're going to get their points. As you said, Ryan, this is not going to be a 17-14 game, in my opinion. That was an anomaly. That game was an anomaly for USC. But I think the recipe for success that Oregon State implemented is the recipe for success. They're just the only defense in the league that had the ability to pull it off, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah.
I thought Washington State did a good job with that early. They just didn't have enough athletes late. That was because USC's played a couple games this year, Ryan. Arizona State was that way. Washington State was that way, where that game was a lot closer than the final score showed. Stanford, I felt, was kind of that way. Now, as they've kind of gotten later in the year, they've had a couple games that were, I'd say, close games on the box score, but really weren't as close, you know, per se, as you'd think. Cal was that way, for example. You know, it was a 6-point game. Kind of. It was 34-14 going in the fourth quarter. right? Yep. Cal scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. Now, USC didn't finish, but we've seen that from Notre Dame. It doesn't mean that that team is on your level or that team played with you, right? And, you know, we saw that recently with Navy. So it's been interesting to watch this USC team kind of go through the year where early in the season they had some blowout games that were much closer than the final score would make you think. And then they've had games where, it's not as close. The Arizona game was the one exception. I thought that was a pretty competitive game for most of the game. And USC pulled away late in that game. But that's where they are, man. They're going to move the ball. They're going to score. And it, for Notre Dame, it's about stopping it. So here, Ryan, we didn't really get into this rushing game, rush attack. I would say this. I think it's advantage Notre Dame, in my opinion, when you consider how well they've been playing lately with Travis Dye out, but it's a slight advantage here. It's definitely advantage USC. How much of an advantage? I don't think it's a huge advantage because, again, we've seen Notre Dame against this type of offense before, talent-wise, and they've held their own. But in one of the games, they couldn't make stops late that they needed to make to win, and the big plays cost them. In the other game, you know, they were able to make all the stops they needed to early, and their offense stepped up. And then down here, the final part, Ryan, is this is going to be, to me, I'm going to go advantage USC here, even though it's close, for two reasons. Number one, Notre Dame has been a team that has not had any games where they've given up a lot of points, right? They've had two games where they gave up 32 points, and in both of those games, those teams scored a lot late. North Carolina scored a lot late. Navy scored a lot late. They've been able to keep points down, but until the BC game, they had never really shut anyone down, and that's a bad offense at USC. So you're going to give up some points. It's about creating stops and creating enough negatives, and I think that's one of the things that's been the big key for Notre Dame is when they can make stops, they're pretty good. When they can't, they're going to give up yards. And so USC, obviously, in a lot of these areas, ranks incredibly high in a league where there's not very good defenses. Notre Dame, in a lot of these areas, ranks pretty high when you consider the schedules they've played, but there's two areas, Ryan, that are going to be key to this game, which is why I give USC the advantage in this matchup. Number one, red zone. Now, what's crazy is that's actually a really big improvement for Notre Dame because at one point in time, opponents were like 20 of 20. Excuse me, 19 of 20 in red zone touchdowns. So they've actually been decent lately at keeping teams out of the end zone. And then the other one is turnovers. And again, Notre Dame has gotten a lot better. Ryan, I mean, they went through that. They went one turnover through the first six games of the year, something insane like that. They've started to force a lot more turnovers. As they have, teams have been at, you know, Clemson struggled to score on Notre Dame because they turned the ball over in crucial turnovers. I mean, Clemson beat Notre Dame's defense 14-7. It's kind of how I like to joke about it. But they tied the Notre Dame defense and special teams 14-14, right? If you can have something like that against USC where you're creating points with your special teams and defense, it only helps. But that's not something you can't game plan for that. Notre Dame, see here, four, five, six, seven. Through the first seven games of the year, Notre Dame forced three turnovers. In the last four games, they've created 10, including five against Boston College, two against Syracuse, two against Clemson. And those turnovers they forced in those two games were huge because in both of those games, they had turnovers that resulted in touchdowns. You had the pick six against Syracuse and the pick six against Clemson. USC, however, does not turn the ball over. I mean, I mean, you see it right there. They're the best team in the country at not turning the ball over. And it's going to be hard to do, but that's where I give him the edge. And it's his arm talent because there's throws that you're like, I'm not sure if he should be making that throw. You know, completion. Right. You know, because he's just got tremendous arm talent. I mean, that's really the thing. Like, why is he trying to fit the ball into? Oh, okay, completion, great. Because he trusts his receivers, right? Yes. And he's going to give them chances, and he's got talented receivers. But the kid's just got tremendous tools, Ryan. He's a very, very talented player.
He is a very frustrating football player for a defensive player because you're like, we had perfect coverage on that play, didn't have a ton of time to throw, but he's still uncorks one and hits a window that just should not be a window that anyone else could hit. Like it's just, that's the one thing I really dislike about PFF, Brian. I don't know if you've ever seen their turnover worthy plays or whatever they say. And I'm just like, that's very subjective, right? A turnover worthy play for one player may not be a turnover worthy play for another player. And Caleb Williams is kind of that guy, man, where you're just like, despite the fact that he does have a lot of gunslinger qualities, right? He's going to let it rip. He's going to take some chances. Still pretty safe with the football, man. Like, he doesn't put it in unnecessary spots too often. When he does, mm-hmm. it's a play that he knows he can make. I mean, right. There's just like the throw I was talking about last week against UCLA. That was a bad decision, right? That's not a throw that even if he saw it earlier, like, that's going to be completed. It was just a bad decision. That stuff, though, does not happen very often. He doesn't do that type of stuff. So when it does happen, the one or two times it happens a game, you have to capitalize, right? You have to make those plays. I think that's a big thing. But more than anything, just got to make this game one-dimensional and make him uncomfortable. You have to. Defensive line, I think, is going to be important. And the secondary playing a just good across-the-board solid football game is going to be crucial in this one. Because Caleb Williams is one of those athletes that, even when things aren't perfect, even when he's scattered a little bit and he has to rush his process or get out of the pocket, he can still make a ton of plays. So I think rush lanes are going to be a big thing in this football game. Caleb Williams could tear you apart from in the pocket, but I would rather see him in the pocket than see what he can do outside of structure, right? Like, I would rather just deal with that headache. So I think rush lanes and the secondary playing a good, solid football game, I think those are the two keys for me in this football game.
Yeah, Ryan, we'll talk about those later tonight. We'll get into keys later tonight specifically. But, yeah, how you handle him in the pocket is going to be a big part of that game. So that is the matchup of Notre Dame against USC, the statistical matchup of Notre Dame and USC. Tonight, when we meet together at 8 o'clock Eastern, we'll kind of dive more into the sort of schematic stuff, the philosophical stuff, you know, what makes USC dangerous and what Notre Dame has to do to defend it. And then offensively, how Notre Dame can exploit the USC defense. So we'll dive more into that as well. We're going to have a mailbag coming up here very, very soon, here in about 2 minutes. Maybe less. But before we do, I want to give you time to hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, sign up for the boards at irishbreakdown.com or boards.irishbreakdown.com. Check out our main website at irishbreakdown.com. Check out our merch store, right? Got all that good stuff on there. Built Bar, use Irish Breakdown promo code, all that good stuff. And of course, if you're listening via podcast, we would appreciate a 5-star review for the Irish Breakdown podcast.